As Washington Post book critic Jonathan Yardley puts it, George W. Bush's new memoir, Decision Points, is not really a memoir. It is instead an attempt to write history before the historians get their hands on it. Bush claimed in his book that Vice President Dick Cheney and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld pushed him to invade Iraq, that he was a dissenting voice, and that no one was more shocked or angry than I was when no weapons of mass destruction were found. More memoirs are coming from the Bush era. Vice President Dick Cheney's memoir, out in the spring. In January, Rumsfeld's book, Known and Unknown, will be released. One wonders, will he acknowledge the WikiLeaked documents that show he accused Western reporters of lying about the Iraq Civil War carnage they were seeing when the Pentagon really did know about it? And will Rumsfeld and Cheney join Bush and other neoconservative Iraq War cheerleaders, such as former Defense Policy Board Chair Richard Perle, or former Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, or former Pentagon Policy Undersecretary Doug Faith, in blaming others or seeming to back away from the war? And where are they all now? Well, our next guest has been keeping an eye on them. Justin Vase is author of Neoconservatism, the Biography of a Movement, and he's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and joins us from their radio studio. Justin, welcome.
Thanks.
Well, first and foremost, these are names that many people are trying to conjure up from the past, you know, but you say it's wrong to think of neocons as something of the past. Do you mean, though, these same neoconservatives, Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle, are they still being listened to?
Yes. Well, they're still very present, certainly in the Washington foreign policy debates of today, of 2010, and many of them are still writing, making their voice heard. Then, of course, they also have an audience in the Republican Party where obviously their voice, if not dominant, is one of the main, I would say, foreign policy schools of thought with their idea, their blend of interventionism, their idea that American power can be used for good and that the risk is that America would do too little, not too much. These ideas, they still defend and push, and so by being an important force in the Republican Party, yes, I do think there's still an important intellectual and political constituency to be reckoned.
But again, is that neocons in general or the specific neocons that also were big cheerleaders in the run-up to the Iraq War, people like Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz?
No, they're still pretty much the same people. I wouldn't mention Perle too much because there's a whole oral legend around him, but he's been mainly doing business in the past few years. He's not been that influential. I would mention Bill Kristol, Bob Kagan on the intellectual side, Max Boot at the Council on Foreign Relations, Elliot Abrams, for example, Duke Fife. Yes, these were the people who were either in the Bush administration or on the sidelines of the Bush administration, but at least pushing in a certain direction that actually did have an influence on Bush, especially on the Iraq War, but also on other issues. And so, yes, they're still pretty much the same people, except they've been joined by younger policy analysts. But they still basically have the same program or vision of the world, the one I outlined just a minute ago.
Well, you mentioned William Kristol. People know him as the founder and editor of the Weekly Standard and the son of one of the original neocons, Irving Kristol. And so he's sort of remained steady. But where are some of the other names that we mentioned? Let's take a look. For instance, let's start with Paul Wolfowitz. He was the neoconservative who argued that the U.S. would be greeted as liberators in Iraq, that the war would pay for itself through the sale of Iraqi oil. And now in a 2009 interview on NPR, he acknowledged that some mistakes were made. Let's listen.
We're going to probably debate the Iraq War for at least as long as I'm alive.
And you can understand why.
I can understand why. And look, there were a lot of mistakes that were made, and some of them I would say I identified and some of them I didn't. And I'm not the architect. I'm not the sole author here.
So Justin Vase, there you have Paul Wolfowitz seeming to do what we see other people do, somewhat back away from his role in Iraq, saying, I'm not the architect. I'm not the sole author. He certainly wasn't, but are you seeing some of the neoconservatives who were banging the drum in the run-up to the war backing away from it?
Well, very few of them have, actually. Most of them are now defending a vision where, yes, the war has been extraordinarily more costly and difficult than was envisaged, especially during the run-up to the war and the campaign. But still, aren't we better off without Saddam Hussein in power? Aren't we better off without having tens of thousands of American soldiers in Saudi Arabia? Aren't we better off with a regime in Iraq that doesn't, for example, pay for some of the terrorism in Israel? So their view is both slightly different from, I would say, the common view on Iraq. And second, it's also a long-term view. It's more or less the point that Bush makes in his own memoirs, which is that over the long run, people will come to recognize that this was a worthwhile enterprise since it ushered in a new era of democracy. Of course, there are good reasons to doubt it, but that's at least their line of defense.
I guess I'm saying, do you think Paul Wolfowitz would have been protesting? Look, I'm not one of the architects of the war. If, in fact, weapons of mass destruction had been found, which they weren't, or a connection had been found between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, there was none, or if the war in Iraq hadn't so derailed the war in Afghanistan, and if the war in Iraq had gone better. So, doesn't there seem to be a little bit of distancing? Wouldn't he have said, yes, I proudly say I was one of the architects?
Of course, victory has many fathers, and defeat, I guess, is pretty much an orphan. And so there's no doubt that the vision would have been different. For Wolfowitz to say he was not an architect is definitely disingenuous, because after all, he was number two at the Pentagon at the time. And so many neocons have been cheerleaders of the war, people that were not in the Bush administration, people like Bill Kristol, Bob Kagan, Max Boot, Gary Schmidt, Tom Donnelly, people at AEI, etc. And these people can claim that they have not been the architects of the war with good reason, because precisely they were pushing in favor of the war and they were giving advice. And by the way, most of the neocons were in favor of doing the invasion with many more men and resources on the one hand, and the Pentagon on the other hand, to the point that that relationship with Rumsfeld was really terrible at that time.
Well, you mentioned AEI, the American Enterprise Institute, the conservative think tank. Paul Wolfowitz is there now. He was president of the World Bank and stepped down after some controversy, including getting a job for his girlfriend there. And so you say Paul Wolfowitz is still being listened to.
Yes, he still writes. For example, just a week ago, he had a piece on Indonesia on the occasion of Obama's visit there, because he used to be an ambassador in Indonesia and has a record of having pushed for democracy, etc. And so, yes, he's definitely not disappeared.
Justin Vase is author of Neoconservatism, the Biography of a Movement. He's also a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. And Justin, let's start with former Pentagon Undersecretary for Policy Doug Feith. The Pentagon's Inspector General found that Feith developed, produced, and then disseminated misleading and contradictory information on Iraq before the war. In his 2008 memoir, Feith blamed others in the Bush administration for bungling the war. He did acknowledge errors, but he said, again, despite the lack of WMDs and other failures, it was still right to invade. So what does that say to you about neoconservative ideology?
Well, obviously they're acting on a set of principles, and sometimes the vision on which they're acting, or the representation, for example, of the region of the Middle East, is really one that is not shared by many experts of the region. So in this sense, it sort of tells something about the functioning of a group, which is a completely informal group. There's no central organization, it's not a party, and it's more of a persuasion, a school of thought, if you'd like.
Richard Perl, he was the longtime neocon who was a consultant for Israel and co-wrote a 1996 paper that was said to be used as a template for the war in Iraq. He argued in that 96 paper for taking out Saddam Hussein. And again, this is long before 9/11. But he recently claimed he and other neocons didn't have a significant influence on the foreign policy of the Bush administration. Now, that sounds like backing away to us, but does he also have a point that maybe, they didn't have as much influence as, Donald Rumsfeld, who really wasn't a neocon?
Well, the ideas pushed by the neocons did play a very significant role after 9/11. many of them were able to present a vision of the world that sort of reinforced George W. Bush's ideas or vision of the region, in particular of the Middle East. They also had a direct role in devising that policy. So saying they had no role is definitely an exaggeration. Saying that they were in full control of American foreign policy would also be an exaggeration.
And by the way, Richard Perle is also at the think tank AEI. Well, to Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld has started the Rumsfeld Foundation to fund microfinance projects and graduate fellowships. He tweets and does Facebook a lot, and as we said, his memoir is coming out. Does he have somebody's ear?
At the moment, not that I know of, no. He is probably the one whose credibility has been the most damaged, because if there's one person that can be blamed for being the faulty architect of the war, it's him. I mean, he decided the number of troops in coordination with the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
He said it would be short and swift and not a lot of troops were needed.
Yes, and once again, many neoconservatives criticized that vision and said, you know, if we're doing some sort of imperial intervention, let's do it well.
Well, and Dick Cheney, he and George Bush made their first joint public appearance at the groundbreaking for the future Bush Presidential Library in Dallas. Cheney has really been off the radar, living in Washington, his daughter Liz helping him write his memoir. She's very active in issues like the New York Mosque. And he, of course, claimed before the war that Iraq may have had a role in 9/11. Not true. He also claimed Saddam Hussein was reconstituting his nuclear program. Not true. And the U.S. would be greeted as liberators in Iraq. Initially, that was true. But then, as we saw, the insurgency flared up. And 2 years into the war, he said the insurgency was in its last throes. Of course, that wasn't true. So what do you expect from his memoir? If President Bush is sort of finger-pointing and saying, Cheney made me do it, what do you expect Cheney to write?
I'm not expecting that much from Cheney's memoirs, simply because he also is not really a neocon. He has really a very sort of pessimistic and gloomy vision of American security. And what he's concerned with is not America's mission or America's promise to transform the world for the better, but rather the sort of narrow focus on American security. The question, of course, is what is enough to ensure American security? We cannot just consider any possible type of attack that has ever been imagined by someone in a room as a 100% possibility, and that's where there is a sort of disproportion and a political judgment that I think was flawed.
Well, is anyone seeking out Dick Cheney's thoughts today? John Boehner, possible presidential candidate Mitt Romney?
Yes, to some extent, Cheney is still a significant force, a significant influence in the Republican Party, because he stands for that sort of uncompromising stance on national security, etc. So even if he's not active advising people like Boehner, for example, he is still a force to be reckoned with in the Republican Party, which is, of course, you know, no small thing.
Well, so Justin Vase, as you and as others say, former GOP Congressman Vin Weber also agrees that neoconservatism remains the dominant intellectual force on foreign policy thinking in the Republican Party. But on the other hand, Pat Buchanan says most conservatives don't like them. Former counsel and foreign relations head Leslie Gelb says in 35 years he's never heard a neocon admit to error. And one also wonders if they're going to be elbowed aside by the Tea Party movement, most of whose members are far more concerned with domestic issues.
Yes. However, people like Rand Paul, for example, just elected senator, are more libertarians, meaning that they insist that, yes, government spending should decrease, and they don't think that open-ended commitments in Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else is really in the American interest, and it costs a lot of money. So right now, neoconservatives, they have competition, and of course, the moment of truth is going to be 2012, and Sarah Palin is an interesting case because on the one hand, she was promoted, I would say, and advised by the neocons, by Bill Kristol, by Randy Shenaman, and others. But then on the other hand, she knows that she needs to tap into the energy of the Tea Party movement, where there are, once again, doubts about open-ended foreign interventions.
Huh. Neoconservatives versus neo-isolationists in the Tea Party. It will be interesting to watch unfold. Justin Vase, author of Neoconservatism, the Biography of a Movement, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. We were asking, where are they now, the architects of the Iraq War? Justin, thanks so much.
Thanks for your invitation.